This is a public service announcement sponsored by Just Blaze and the good folks at Rockefeller Records.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Ho.
Welcome into another edition of the Naked Bootleg Podcast, presented by the Boston Herald. And this week, Adam and I are joined by a very special guest, the Johnny Drama of Foxborough, Kevin Dillon of Mass Live. What's up, Kevin?
What's going on? Not too much. You know, I should have known Johnny Drama would come up. I got called Drama throughout college, so it kind of faded away since I've joined Mass Live, but I was called Drama for years. So,
well, it's my Entourage is my favorite show, so I couldn't let it go. I had to drop one Johnny Drama reference in there.
I've only watched like one or two episodes of Entourage. I really should brush up on my source material. So,
well, the funny thing is you're nothing like the character on the show. No.
I've learned a couple lines. I know just to yell victory and throw my arms up. And,
there you go.
I've got to learn it. So
yeah. He's one of a kind in that show. But yeah, it's one of my favorite shows, and I had to do it. I couldn't help it. But let's talk some Patriots football now, and we'll start with the news that is on everybody's mind, it seems like, these days. Rob Gronkowski, one of the dirtier plays I've seen from a Patriots player in my time watching the Pats, usually a team that stays away from that kind of stuff. Unfortunately, bad moment there for Gronk during the Bills game towards the end there in the fourth quarter. First, Kevin, what were your impressions of the hit and kind of what it meant for Rob's career as a whole, and also the suspension, obviously, too?
Well, I mean, first off, it was a dumb play. He shouldn't have done it. He was just frustrated. It looked like there might have been some sort of pass interference or holding, but that doesn't excuse you from throwing your arm into the back of someone's head and driving it into the ground. So it was definitely a suspendable hit. I know a lot of people on Twitter were saying that, it was maybe a big fine. But no, it was a suspension-worthy hit. So Gronk gets his one game suspension. It's probably for the best. It comes against the Miami Dolphins instead of against the Pittsburgh Steelers. But this is tough news for Gronk because, one, he's going to be probably targeted by some players on the other team that are looking to get back at him. They play the Bills again later this season. I think it's on Christmas Eve. The Bills players were not happy after the game in the locker room. I know Kevin Duffy from Mass Live was over there talking to the Bills players, and they all called it a dirty hit. They were really kind of surprised about it because Gronk doesn't typically make these kinds of plays. But and now it's tough for Gronk because he's got to hit his incentives to make more money. I think he might lose a few million dollars, if I remember correctly, if he can't hit his incentives. And it just got a lot harder. I think he's got to average something like 117 receiving yards and 8 receptions over his final three games here to reach his incentives. So not a smart play by Gronk, and it could end up costing him. So,
yeah, I think that was the biggest thing for me was, when he appealed it, at least, a lot of people were asking, why did you appeal? You know, it was pretty blatantly a cheap shot, which it absolutely was. But the money was really the big thing, was those incentives in the contract. And you were up there in Buffalo. What was the reaction from the fans like up there for the hit and before the hit even?
Well, when it actually happened, I don't necessarily know how many people saw it because it was sort of after the play, and like it just looked like there was some sort of a scrum on the ground. And then they showed the replay, and the crowd was pretty loud. They were pretty quiet for most of that point of the game, but they were pretty loud. They were not happy with Gronk, and I think the players themselves were they knew what he did. They saw the replay. They saw him kind of wind up and take that, and so they were pretty clear about their displeasure with Gronk. And I think Gronk after the game knew that he was in trouble. He came out of the locker room and he was kind of hesitant to come over to the big media scrum, but we weren't leaving. And so he came over and it looked like he kind of prepared what he wanted to say. So he said that he was just frustrated and he apologized to Tre'Davious White, and he must have said it 4 or 5 times. And then the second question came in and it was almost like the talking points went away. And he was just like, man, I was really frustrated with the referees, and they're calling the craziest things on me. He had some great quote about how they're calling the craziest stuff on him ever. But then, it was pretty clear, he apologized, but he was more focused on the referees than the actual action he did. So I would imagine that Bills players have watched that, and they could maybe read through the lines there, and I don't think they're going to be very happy about it. So he's lucky that the next game is in Foxborough instead of Buffalo, because he would have really heard it from the Buffalo fans if he had a little bit more time on the field. He didn't come back out after the play, so he didn't really get a chance to feel it.
Yeah, that's a really good summary. And, I feel like the things that you said about the suspension actually being a silver lining, or not a silver lining, but like halfway of a good thing in terms of for the Pats is there. I mean, you don't want him out there. These players talk. They're not just, Bills players that are upset with them. It's other players around the league who, feel like the Pats will get away with too much here and there. You don't want Miami. And it's not just going after Gronk. Players will go after, other players on the Patriots for retribution. He puts other guys in danger when something like that happens. And if he hadn't been suspended, then, that would make those other players more emboldened. I think this one-game suspension is a good thing. You don't want this to go completely unpunished. I mean, he wasn't ejected from the game. So, you'd basically be opening the door for so many other things if something like that went unpunished. And so I'm glad that the suspension's happened. Obviously, I think he'll learn from this. He does have to get over the flags thing, though, because that's football. And, guys get upset over flags all the time. You're not the only one being held, Gronk. it's bad with you. I think you also have to take into account, and I remember, Evan, we were talking about this last week, is that Tre'Davious White is a rookie, and he comes from LSU, where they do a lot of man coverage, and in man coverage in college, they let you get away with a lot more than what they let you get away with in the pros. So, in his specific case, he did hold him a lot on that one play, but he's used to getting away with a little bit more than that, or a little bit more than you would in the NFL. And he's a rookie, and he's a very good player, but he does that a little bit, and that's an adjustment period for every rookie cornerback when they come into this league. And the fact that he sort of paid the price for 7 years worth of frustration is obviously unfair. And to look at it like, well, he's just their cornerback. Well, we were saying last week or in the lead up to this game in the last podcast, that this guy's a cornerstone for their franchise. He's somebody they picked in the first round who is turning out to be really, really good. And he's part of why their secondary is starting to play so well this year, and so it's bad on a number of levels. I mean, the fact that he was face down, motionless when it happened, it takes away some of the heat of the moment comments you make. I mean, I know he's in the heat of the moment, but guy's down, play's over. Clearly, there's a couple seconds go by, and then you do that. So. Just put out this disclaimer, good people do bad things. I don't think Gronk is a dirty player that get, that was definitely a dirty hit, but, when people say he's out of character, it is, he can be a goof sometimes, but he's not a mean-spirited person, obviously. But this instance, he's got to get the flags out of his head, and he's got to, get it together when it comes to that. One just last funny thing I was thinking of is, if the Patriots sort of wanted to protect him or use him differently in the next game, like have him block and get that rage out, you know, a lot, you know. I would use him as a lead blocker. I would put him at defensive end, something like that, because he's obviously frustrated with the lack of physicality he can use because he knows he's going to get a block.
Well, I was going to say one thing that if you ask Gronk about the officiating with these holding calls and the offensive pass interference, he will 100% of the time complain about the referees. And it's something that's so different than the rest of the Patriots, because typically the Patriots, they don't say anything about this kind of stuff. They're like, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. But Gronk 100% of the time will complain about the referees. So it's just something that's interesting. It makes him a little bit different from the Patriots. And I would kind of be surprised if they didn't address that with him at some point.
Yeah. He takes a little bit of liberties for being an all-pro tight end.
Yeah.
You know, you don't normally see Tom Brady take those liberties as much for being, you know, maybe the greatest quarterback of all time. But Gronk's maybe the best tight end of all time, and he kind of lets himself speak a little bit more than some other Patriots. But I definitely think that, just to wrap this up here, that they need to figure out something between Gronk letting some of these things go, the league and the refs kind of figure things out here a little bit about how they're going to officiate him. He said that at the beginning of the season he felt like he had a pretty good, you know, understanding of how it was going to go this year. They talked to him a lot about extending his arms all the way and stuff like that and pushing off on guys. And now all of a sudden it kind of seems like he's back in a lost area again with what the refs are going to call and what they're not going to call. Obviously it's going to change between crews and change between games. But you know, I think that if there can be a way to officiate him at a more consistent level, then maybe you don't get this type of frustration boiling over and the results of what happened. Obviously, you know, not a great look, but at the same time, you can see it festering in Gronk all season long, you know, the way that he talks about the officials, the way that he acts on the field when he gets calls thrown his, you know, against him. So maybe there could be a little bit more consistency there from everybody on officiating him. He's like, you know, it's impossible to cover him. So there's got to be, you know, kind of a middle ground there. But moving on now to the run offense. We're going to talk a little bit about both the run offense and the run defense for different reasons, I would imagine. But with the rush offense, the Patriots offense really getting a lot out of the running game recently. And for me, I really think that the blocking schemes and the designs that they used, Dante Scarnecchia rearing his head again, some really creative and different, you know, designs that they have run up teams where they use a lot of different guys, not just the offensive line, but the tight ends, the fullback, the wide receivers are blocking. It's really a team effort on offense right now to get these running backs going.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think one thing we're going to see next week is probably a lot of Dwayne Allen with Gronk out, but Dwayne Allen has been pretty good as a run blocker. He's been a key guy in a lot of different players that have kind of sprung Deion Lewis free. And, I mean, maybe he won't catch four or five touchdown passes, although I am holding my breath for that. But I really want to see Dwayne Allen catch a touchdown pass. But anyway, I do think that he's a key player in that run blocking scheme. And the Patriots have really ramped up their run offense the past couple games. I think they actually ran the ball more times than they passed it in each of the last couple games. I think they've only done that three times this season, those past two games, and then also their win over the Falcons. So when the Patriots are running the ball frequently and they're running the ball well, they are a very effective offense. They can control the clock. They can set up play action. And so guys like Shaq Mason, Deion Lewis, Rex Burkhead, they've all been really important in what the Patriots have been doing on offense.
Yeah, it's a good point. Go ahead, Adam.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, the efficiency of their running game is so far better than it was last year in terms of between the 20s and, you know, yards per carry. You know, I feel like it's diverse. They can be effective on different parts of the field. They're good in the goal line situation in short. And, you know, they can get big chunk plays out of it, which isn't always the case. You know, they're getting 20, 30-yard runs from Dion Lewis and Rex Burkhead's even, you know, really, you know, emerged in sort of a lesser role than Dion, but in that respect, but still playing a big role. So I think they've found what they're sort of you know, they're the right mix with the running backs, okay? And you know, with Devlin and, like you said, sort of everybody, they've got plays that work. Like these lead plays with Devlin are you know, ISOs or whatever you want to call them, are very effective. I mean, he's like a hammer. And Brady likes the fact that they've gone back to it, and I think he should too, just because, you know, it, you know, the an effective running game keeps teams from teeing off. You know, like, you know, he doesn't, if you don't want the thing like they had in the Super Bowl where he threw what, 65 passes. You know, you're gonna get hurt. So you got an old quarterback who is not dropping back as much and can rely on a running game to help finish games, that'll extend, you know, his career a little bit more. It'll keep the team able to put games away. I mean, I think a big part of them being to keep the other teams down scoring-wise is, you know, they're able to, you know, finish games with those, like, you know, 4 minute drives or anything like that. So, I really believe it's a positive step for them, and they're going to need it going forward to stay that way. But, you know, and, you know, look, even you look at their, when they lose a right tackle and a second right tackle, it still doesn't take a step down. So I think it's been really positive for them.
Yeah, I think that point points directly to how great this scheme is. You know, they can plug and play players into that run blocking scheme, and it doesn't seem like it misses a beat. Whereas with the pass protection, it's been okay still, but it's, you know, kind of taken more of a hit since they've had the injuries than it did. But, you know, it's kind of gearing up before that. One thing, you know, with the blocking, I just think that Gronk's impact on the blocking is really underrated still somehow. You know, the way that he can block from the tight end position, and he can block a one-tech defensive tackle, and then they can climb up with the rest of the offensive line off of that, is like something that not a lot of tight ends in this league can do. Maybe Gronk, there's guys like Greg Olsen, when he's healthy, could probably pull off a block like that. Vance McDonald's a really good blocker. But Vance McDonald is one of those guys that's like a blocking tight end. You know, Gronk is obviously does it all. So yeah, it's pretty amazing the different things that they can do with Gronk to kind of, you know, help out the offensive line. Like those plays where they push down on the end with Gronk, and then Shaq Mason will loop around, and he's the lead blocker now, you know, up going up the field. And it's like, what are you going to do when Shaq Mason, who can move at 325 pounds, is coming right at you as a linebacker? You know, you're screwed. I wanted to talk about Rex Burkhead with you guys for a little bit, because I thought in this last game was his best game of the year by far. And he really ran with some burst and with some physicality that I didn't really know he had in this last game. Was running over guys at touchdown. He ran over a couple guys to get in the end zone. Burkhead and Lewis have really taken this running back group by storm here, and kind of made Mike Gillisley a healthy scratch for the past, what, 4 weeks. And James White's even been kind of an afterthought because of these two guys.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, I think Gillisley, I don't think he's done with this team. I think that he'll come back at some point and he'll do something good. But Burkhead's been so good. I was actually going to pose a question to you guys. If the Patriots could keep one running back right now, like if they only have one running back for the rest of the year, which running back do you think they would keep? Because I personally kind of think it might be Rex Burkhead. His ability to score from the goal line, he's been really effective as a goal line back. He's been effective as a short yardage back. He can do things in the passing game. He can break those 14, 15 yard burst runs. He plays special teams, can block kicks. He's even back there on the kick return, although he does mostly blocking that. I know Dion Lewis does a lot of that, but Burkhead has been so versatile, so good for this team. He splits out as a slot receiver at times. They can use him in so many different ways. He's been such a dynamic offensive weapon. He's a little bit cliche, but he's a football player. He chips players and pass protection. He's just so good.
Yeah, I agree with all those strengths. I think he's fantastic. But I do say if there's one guy to keep in terms of a pure running back, I'd go with Deion. I still think he's the best running back on the team. But you're right. With the number of things, if we were talking like if this was like a roster cut situation, there are two guys, you could definitely keep Rex because he can do so many things. His versatility is outstanding, and he's the type of guy that fits in well in that locker room. He's really good. Yeah, I pose that question back to you.
Well, we're a Deion Lewis podcast, so we've been pounding the table in the beginning of the season when they weren't giving the ball to Deion between the tackles. We were like, what's going on here? He's clearly the best pure runner on the team. But like I said, this last game, Burkhead really impressed me. I didn't realize that he had that kind of athleticism. He was really, a specimen out there in this last game against Buffalo. I mean, they couldn't stop him. So I was really impressed by him, and I agree that the versatility is, we know that Deion Lewis can catch the ball out of the backfield. We've seen him do it, but this year it hasn't been as much of a part of his game. So it is an interesting question. I definitely think that if you were to go back to this offseason, they probably would give the deal they gave to Gillislee to Burkhead, right? I mean, that three-year deal, I'm sure they would much rather to have Burkhead locked up for the next couple years instead of Gillislee. So either way you look at it, whether it's him over Lewis or him over Gillislee, I mean, he has earned his spot on this team. And, one other thing, and I'll throw it back to you. The big thing with this run game, and we were talking about it, Adam, about a month ago, I would say, was that they can really use it to kind of be the cog that moves the offense from first down to first down. And then they can use the passing game to get shot plays down the field. And that's exactly what you saw in Buffalo. I mean, Brady only threw the ball at 30 times, but he had 256 yards and averaged almost 9 yards per attempt. And I really thought that was kind of the culmination of all of that, run game success. And then finally they threw some play actions. They threw the ball a little bit too just in regular dropbacks. But mainly it was just, chunk play after chunk play after chunk play in the passing game because that running game really got going. But I definitely am interested to hear what you have to say, Kevin, about Burkhead and Gillislee too, because I feel like that contract is perfect for what they would want to give to Burkhead at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting to see what they'll do with Burkhead. Part of me thinks that Gillislee will be back and he'll be able to contribute at some point. But, I mean, like, how do you take out Deion Lewis? He's been so good. I think, if I remember correctly, he's only trailing Alvin Kamara in forced missed tackles this year, according to PFF.
Yeah, in yards per attempt.
Yeah, he's been ridiculous. So, I mean, with Lewis clicking, with Burkhead clicking, with White having his clear role, there's no reason to have Gillislee on the roster. But the thing that we've always seen with Lewis and even Burkhead to an extent is that they get hurt. They get hurt every year. And part of me wonders if that's coming here for Lewis, especially with the amount they're using both Lewis and Burkhead. I mean, the fact that you can spell Lewis, Burkhead, and White all together maybe lessens the workload on them, makes it a little bit less likely for them to get hurt. So that could be key for them. But at the same time, Gillislee's got to be ready because there's going to be I think there's going to be some goal line carries for him in the future. There's going to be some middle of the field, just move the chains carries for him in the future. And he's got to be ready to take them. I thought he wasn't necessarily too bad early in the season, but he wasn't good enough to hold on to the job over Lewis.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more that there's going to be, whether it's a week 17 game where they're resting guys or whatever, there's going to be a game where Gillislee is going to be active, and they're going to ask him to do some stuff. So it's not completely over for him. But let's move over
to Brian Hoyer Mike Gillislee game is going to be so good,
right? I mean, we're all ready for it, right? I mean, we're all killing for it. So I think week 17 they're playing the Jets. On New Year's Eve, I believe it is.
And 140 yards, two touchdowns for Mike Gillislee, a passing touchdown for Brian Hoyer. It's going to be great.
There's a very good chance that that could be the big Gillislee Philip Dorsett game that we've all we've all been waiting for. But
Jacob Hollister is going to catch that touchdown. It's going
to
be great.
More Jets will dance to anything videos will come out of that.
Of course,
we joke, but you know we also take it for granted that Week 17 is probably not going to matter for the Patriots. But moving over to the other side of the ball, NASA. A little bit less exciting. The run defense got gashed on Sunday, guys. 183 yards, 7 yards per carry by the Bills. And a really good rushing attack for the Bills, but they really had their way. What are your guys' thoughts, both you know, big picture and small picture, for this run defense right now?
Well, I think that part of the reason they got gashed by the Bills so much was they had to figure out what they were doing with Tyrod Taylor. I know he had a couple plays where the linebacker that was playing the spy overcommitted, and then Taylor just kind of ran right around him and then got a whole bunch of yards. McCoy was very effective on the ground as well, though. And, I mean, LeSean McCoy is going to do that to teams. The run defense does need to be better. I know with all the injuries they've had, I would expect them to have fallen off a little bit. And if I remember correctly, they were running at Eric Lee for the Bills. And so he's been in there for a few weeks. He's got to figure out what he's doing. It's probably still better than having Cassius Marsh there. So they're still a work in progress, which at this point in the season, you don't hope for them to be a work in progress. They are a little lucky that the Dolphins have kind of lost so much at running back. But Kenyon Drake had a great game last week against the Broncos. I think he was PFF's highest graded running back last week. He had 9 forced missed tackles, 4.61 yards after contact, touchdown, 120 yards. I mean, he was pretty good. So that's going to be the biggest thing for them to focus on. However, with Jay Cutler at quarterback instead of Tyrod Taylor, I think there's maybe one element you don't really have to worry about there. I don't expect Jay Cutler to be trying to juke out linebackers and run down the sideline. And if he does, well, that'll be quite the show. So I think that they'll be okay. I think they'll bounce back against the Dolphins.
Yeah, and that segues into our next one. But just quickly about the run defense, it's a very big concern to me, I think, if they fall behind. And a team can, put a game away using the run. Now that they've been going up against teams where the other teams have been behind, and you know, after a certain point, you have to start tossing the ball around. So, in a close game where the other team's just got to pick up a few first downs to win and maybe run the ball instead of try to pass like it happened in the Super Bowl. I think that could be a very dangerous thing against them. So we'll see if it actually rears its ugly head to the point where they lose a game. Who knows? But yeah, let's move on to the Dolphins a little bit. I haven't gotten too much a chance to delve into them because I haven't been down there this week. But I've been reading up and looking back at the games and stuff. What do you guys see as the most dangerous, figuratively and literally parts about this Dolphins game?
It's a good question. I agree with Kevin on this one. I think Kenyon Drake is really the X factor in terms of when the Dolphins have the ball. I mean, he had a really nice game against the Broncos. This was one of the Broncos game. I just watched it last night. Broncos Dolphins from last week was one of the worst football games I've seen all year. There was 5 combined interceptions, 2 pick sixes, 1 for each team, a blocked punt, and a safety as well thrown in there. And it was horrible. And Trevor Siemian was even worse than horrible. Trevor Siemian had a QBR of 1.6.
That's like impossible. Like how did that happen? 1.6.
He had a worse passer rating than a spike. He had a 30.6 passer rating. A spike is 39.6. So if you throw the ball into the ground, you are better than Trevor Siemian was on Sunday. So, I mean, this was like, it's really hard to take away anything from the Dolphins' defense.
And the Dolphins' pass defense has, like, typically this season not been very good. That's been one of their worst areas. And so, part of me thinks, like, they had a good game last game, so, like, good for the Dolphins' pass defense, but it came against Trevor Siemian, and the Broncos have no clue what they're doing at quarterback right now.
Vance Joseph is done. Like, they're going to fire Vance Joseph. Like, they have to fire Vance Joseph. And I don't, like, want to take the guy's job or anything like that. Not like my opinion's going to matter. But honestly, like, he's a one-and-done coach written all over it. Their defense has regressed big time. Their offense has regressed big time. I mean, this was a disgusting game to watch. Like, I barely got through it. And the two things that I took away from it that were positive from the Dolphins, maybe three things. One thing I thought, Jay Cutler was typical Jay Cutler. High, some really good highs, some really low lows. Two really bad interceptions, a pick six, but some really nice throws early on in the game, especially downfield, and a couple of good touchdown passes. Kenyon Drake was the best player on the field for the Dolphins on both sides of the ball, I thought. Really good runner, broke a lot of tackles, had one run where he was stopped in the backfield. He looked down, and he kind of just broke the tackle and never really went down and ran up the sideline. The touchdown run he had was nice. So, you know, he's another guy to circle. And defensively, I mean, the pass rush did get after Siemian, and that might have really had been the only thing that they really did that wasn't just Siemian shooting himself in the foot, was mainly, you know, getting that pass rush awake. And Dominican Sue, every time he comes through the line and he's about to hit the quarterback, he just destroys the quarterback. Like, it's like he's out to kill the guy. So, you know, he's obviously a guy that you always want to you know, be ready for, I guess, as an offense. But mainly, I mean, man, that Broncos team is garbage, just hot garbage.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think the pass rush, as you pointed out, that's probably the biggest area that the Patriots have to be worried about, because I think in this game, the thing you have to be worried about is protecting Tom Brady. And then Dominican Sue's out there. Cameron Wake has always given you problems. Charles Harris is playing a lot better. I think he actually outsnapped Cameron Wake last game. He was their first-round pick. He's a really athletic guy. So they've got a bunch of different talented pass rushers that can get to the quarterback. And, I mean, at this point of the season, I think the Dolphins are just going to try to they're going to play very physical. How about that? With the Patriots, they're going to really kind of goon it up a little bit. They're going to try to knock down Tom Brady as many times as they can. With no Gronk out there, they're going to play really physical with Brandon Cooks. They're going to be all over the Patriots in terms of physicality. So being able to protect yourself against a team like this, especially ahead of the Steelers game, will be really important for the Patriots.
Yeah, I totally agree. Everything what you said, both of you guys is on point. And that extra element of, you know, we might take out somebody for, you know, all this Gronk stuff. I know, you know, it didn't happen to their team, but, you know, a lot of guys out there do not like the Patriots, period. And so there's that element too. You got to just keep that in mind. Now, this is another game, I feel, and we've been saying it week after week since they've started running the ball better, is, you know, a great way to take away some of this stuff is to be able to establish the ground game again. You take some of the pressure off Brady, and you force the pass rushers to sort of you force the pass rushers to worry about something else, so they can't get that great jump. And so, you know, another thing that, you know, you look at with this Dolphins team is, you know, if you're able to get the play action going, you can keep more guys in to protect, because there's less guys, you know, back. You know, the Dolphins will have, you know, more guys in the box. You've seen this, you know, a lot with this play action recently. You can run two man routes and, you know, have pretty decent numbers against you or with you, I should say, because teams are so concerned about the run. So, you know, I think, again, if you're the Pats, the offensive strategy should involve at some point, you know, really sticking to the run. And going back to your point about Kenyon Drake, Gase is somebody who I think is good at, sticking to the run no matter what, you know, and not, you know, abandoning it and just chucking the ball around when he gets way behind. I think he's his offenses, like we've talked about before, his offenses don't abandon balance just because of the scoreboard.
Yeah, I think Gase is a guy that I said this after the Dolphins game, you know, a couple of weeks ago. If I'm the Dolphins, I stay, you know, pat with Adam Gase for another year. I think that their offense it presents enough openings in the passing game, especially that are scheme oriented, that I think that he deserves a lot of credit for. You know, he has Jay Cutler and Matt Moore as his quarterbacks. I know he kind of picked Jay Cutler. But that was kind of a last, you know, stitch, you know, thing for him when Tannehill went down. So I think Tannehill would definitely do better. I think that if they're definitely in the market for drafting another quarterback, probably, especially with Tannehill coming off an injury. But either way, I think that their offensive scheme is pretty successful for the most part. I mean, Kenny Stills is having a pretty good year. Jarvis Landry is not, but maybe we're kind of learning that Jarvis is not, you know, as great of a player as maybe he had been hyped up to be in other years. Maybe not. Maybe that is something that you can knock on Gase a little bit. But defensively, you know, they're just very vanilla. They're very basic coverages. A lot of just cover three shells where they just drop guys and just hope that the pass rush gets home. That's really what got them beat against the Patriots, because the Patriots are a team that, you know, they're going to call plays that are, you know, aimed to beat your coverages, first of all. And second of all, Tom Brady, if you don't make it confusing at all for him, then he's just going to pick you apart. So I think that defensively, maybe that they could use obviously some more talent, but maybe a coaching overhaul a little bit. But I don't think Gase is necessarily the problem. Whereas, you know, with the Broncos, their opponent last week, Vance Joseph, I would kick him to the curb right now. You know, I think it's overall just with Miami, I mean, I agree with what you both said. They're going to get scrappy. Like, this game is going to get chippy, especially if it gets out of hand late and the Patriots are up by a couple scores. You know, this is one of those games where you kind of, they came out of this last Miami game and they had injuries all over the place to a lot of key players. This is one of those games, in my opinion, where you just got to win and get out healthy and get ready for Pittsburgh.
Absolutely, yeah. And it was a good point you brought up about the cover threes right there. The Dolphins coverage, it really was pretty soft, and that's how we saw Brandon Cooks get open so many times. They ran that over route a couple times where they just had one guy streak up the middle. Both safeties came back, and then they were wide open
twice. Like no one within 15, 20 yards of them twice.
Absolutely. And honestly, I kind of think like this could sneaky be a Philip Dorsett game. Like I was joking about Dwayne Allen and stuff like that, but Philip Dorsett, I mean, he's been wide open a number of times over the recent weeks, and Brady hasn't seen him. And if that happens like enough times, they're going to see that on film and be like, hey, Brady, you should probably look his way. So, I mean, Dorsett, he's been doing a lot better just getting open, sitting down in the soft spots in the zone, and I think they can throw him a few more targets. And considering his speed, considering his ability to get downfield, there could be some big gains in store for Philip Dorsett.
A lot of people on Twitter asking me about Philip Dorsett and saying that play which led to the big, you know, tirade between McDaniels and Brady on the sideline. Dorsett's wide open up the sideline for a walk-in touchdown, and everyone's like, Dorsett's wide open, Dorsett's wide open. It's like, yeah, he was wide open, but he's also on the other side of the field, and he's probably Tom Brady's like third or fourth read on the play, and Brady had what he wanted. He just didn't pull the trigger. So it's kind of like one of those things where it's like, yeah, he should have seen Dorsett, but at the same time, like, Dorsett's kind of just clearing out space at that point more than anything for Brady. It's not like he's like the focal point of the offense. But yeah, I agree. Against this Miami team, they don't have a ton of speed in the secondary. Rashad Jones is a really good player, but their other safeties are kind of more in the box guys, and their corners are still pretty shoddy right now. I mean, Xavien Howard had a nice game against the Broncos. He had a pick six, his second year corner, but he's kind of really the only hope that they have there in terms of talent at the corner position. I would assume that corner is right up there on their top priorities in the draft next year. Maybe even the guy that they pick in the first round will be a corner. You know, Man, this Miami team, this game's on Monday night because they made the playoffs last year. So, the schedule makers thought that maybe, just maybe, we could have kind of a matchup between two playoff teams in the AFC East for this game. But it just has not worked out that way for Miami this year. But it's kind of also, we talked about this, Adam, before the last Miami game, but it's also kind of been the year of hell for Miami. It started out like that, at least. You know, they had the hurricane, and then you had the coach with, you know, get the was the offensive line coach that gets fired. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on in South Beach, so.
Yeah, the guys like to party. Let's not pile on him too much.
Yeah. So it's there's a lot, just, you know, a lot going on in South Beach for the team. But anyways, Kevin, what do you got coming down the road here this weekend?
Well, this weekend, I mean, I'll just be doing some game day coverage and everything. It'll be on the road, so I'm not going to Miami. I'll be watching from home, but I'll be
in the blizzard.
In the blizzard, yeah, exactly. That'll be a good time. I'd love to go to Miami, but no, I think the Patriots, they'll probably end up cruising here, and they'll probably go into the Steelers game. That's really the one I'm looking forward to. I think I'm going to be ramped up for that one because, I mean, the Steelers have gotten banged up a little bit, especially against the Bengals, and they're playing the Ravens this week. So, like, who knows how many injuries they'll have there. But the Patriots will be going up against elite skill position players like Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. And, I mean, Roethlisberger has always given them some trouble. At the same time, the Steelers' defense has not given the Patriots much trouble. So I think it should be a shootout. And so I'm just obviously, Patriots focused on the next week, you know, but that Steelers game in the future is something I'm really looking forward to. So,
yeah. When Mike Tomlin said that he was already looking forward to the Patriots game a few weeks ago, it was kind of weird to me because he had two divisional teams in a row that he still had to play, both of which are pretty good teams. I mean, the Bengals aren't a great team, but the Ravens look like they might be headed to the playoffs, have a really good defense. This is not a – you know, the Patriots kind of have a little bit of a layup with the Dolphins this week before this Pittsburgh game, but Pittsburgh – that Baltimore game is not a layup. So, so it'll be interesting to see what happens with that game.
Absolutely, yeah.
I agree. With this Dolphins game, you know, I think they're gonna win. I don't think the Dolphins are a team that's particularly good in close games or anything like that. So it could follow the same script as usual in terms of the playbook that Patriots have been using. You know, no, I'm not saying specific playbook, but, you know, just sort of the game plan. They'll get out in front, use the running game. The other team will, you know, sort of move the ball but not be able to score touchdowns instead of field goals, and they'll do that, and that formula has been working. So, and then, you know, like you guys have been saying with the Steelers game, that's really the showcase game. The Steelers, you know, I've been getting on them a little bit lately in some of our past shows, and like you said, Evan, they're sort of like a fantasy football team come to life with how they play. But they've found ways to win, you know, so they're
every week they find ways to win. It's frustrating because they should have lost to the Colts. They should have lost to the Packers probably. Now they should have lost to the Bengals, and they won all three of those games.
Yeah, and so that belief, that type of confidence that when you're doing that for a whole season is very dangerous for an opponent, especially if it's a close game. And so it's down in Pittsburgh. It's going to be a lot on the line, you know. You know, I don't blame Tomlin for looking forward to it. He's just being honest. You know, I don't think it's like the right thing to do when you've got players, when you got other games ahead of you. It's obviously disrespectful of those opponents, but I mean, that is kind of what everybody's thinking. Probably, you know, the Pats are guarding against it, but.
You know, I wonder which fan base actually hates the Patriots more, the Steelers, the Bills, the Jets, like, because obviously it's division opponents and everything, but when was the last time the Bills or the Jets, I mean, I guess the Jets not that long ago, but like faced the Patriots in the playoffs? Like, it's been a while, but the Steelers seem to face the Patriots in the playoffs every year, and the Patriots keep on knocking them out of the playoffs every year, so... I was in the tailgate in Buffalo this weekend, and I was asking fans their favorite or least favorite Patriots moment, and they couldn't really think of specific moments. Like, you know, they were just kind of like F Tom Brady. But then when you think about the Steelers, like, how many moments do you think they have over the years of just the Patriots, like, ending their season or just ruining their night. Like, that's probably a lot of them.
Yeah. It's funny. There's a lot of crossover Buffalo Pittsburgh fans. I got a friend from Buffalo whose dad is a Steelers fan. It's not like a region that's too far away from each other. So that's good. And actually, Kevin, I did want to ask you a little bit more because you were with the Bills. You were inside the Bills Mafia. What was that vibe like? Because we've seen so much, and obviously we've gotten on Pats fans a little bit this week for them excusing Gronk for all this stuff. But I just want to see, you know, what was it like to be among, you know, that crowd as a Patriots reporter?
All right, so I do a weekly tailgate video every week in Foxborough, and that's pretty good. You know, I've actually seen some regulars at this point, but you know, everyone's just like having a good time, you know, making their burgers and stuff like that. But then you go to Buffalo, and it's a whole different animal. I know there's more stuff going off in the distance. So there's when you go into Buffalo, it's kind of like it's a suburban area, so people are actually tailgating in people's yards. Like the house is near their charge parking. And then they just have people tailgate there. But then there's like further off parking lots. That's where the real stuff goes down. That's where the people do the last ride to other people on plastic tables and throw them through and light them on fire and stuff like that. And as you gradually get closer to the stadium, it gets like a little bit more tame. I saw there was the big Barstool van or bus that had a whole bunch of people around it. Everyone's got Zubaz pants. No one has the same jersey. So, you know, you'll go around Foxborough and you see Tom Brady, you see Rob Gronkowski everywhere. And you go around Buffalo, you see EJ Manuel, Eric Mold.
What jersey are they going to buy? I mean,
there was one guy that had Dan Carpenter. Like, he... like,
well, at least they have fun with it, you know?
Right, exactly. Like, everyone's got a different jersey. And then, but then, like, the people I went through, that was, like, the mid-crowd. You know, like, they were going to be a little rowdy. There was some guy that they had curse words on their shirts. There was one guy I talked to, and I asked his least favorite Patriots-Bills moment. And he's dressed – he's got a full Bills wig. He's got a face painted blue, a jersey, and, like – Bill's pants, everyone's got Zubaz pants, and I asked him what his least favorite Patriots Bills moment was, and he looks at me, he goes, I'm a Falcons fan, so it was 28-3. So I'm really confused, like, this man was so ruined by the Super Bowl that he just flew to Buffalo and became
the diehard
Bills fan, so that guy was having a good time.
People are crazy, man. It doesn't surprise me. I went to one Patriots Bills game when I was up in Ithaca, and I honestly wore a jersey, and I regretted it. I was like, I shouldn't have done this. Like, I had people all over me. The Patriots blew them out. I had to leave early because I was worried that people were going to start throwing, you know, stuff at me and whatnot. I mean, it gets really rowdy up there. It's not a place to go if you are if you're an opposing fan.
Probably the most ruthless thing I saw was there was a big white billboard on the inside of the stadium, and someone wrote on it, Tom Brady eats buffalo wings with ranch. And that was, like, poor Tom Brady. Like, how is he going to recover from that? I'm not sure, but it's probably part of the TB12 method. So.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if fatty ranch dressings are a part of the TB12 method, but he ate those biscuits, so you never know now. But
absolutely,
man, that's too funny though. I mean, yeah, those Bills fans, you have to give them a lot of credit because they haven't been to the playoffs in 20 years, and they still go out there and they put on a show every single week. It's almost like the tailgate is their, you know, game, because the game itself they know is probably not going to go away most of the time these days. So, but you have to give them a lot of credit for still going out there. It gets freezing up there, and they're still out there in December, you know, cheering on the team, whether they're 6-10 or 10-6. So that's a testament to those Bills fans. But that's all we have for this week. Thanks again, Kevin, for coming on with us this week. And we'll be back following the Dolphins game to gear up for the big showdown with the Pittsburgh Steelers. But until then, for Kevin, Adam,
Kevin, Kevin, we got to make sure we get Kevin's Twitter page on there.
Oh yeah, what's your Twitter handle, Kev?
I'm at by Kevin Dillon, recently verified. So that
blue oh, you got the blue check mark.
There you go. Yeah, pretty excited about it. So
okay, well now I'll end the show if that's okay with you, Adam.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure we get the plug in.
All right, so for Adam Kirchin, Kevin Dillon, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for tuning in to the Naked Bootleg Podcast.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Ho, H to the OV. I used to move snowflakes by the OC. I guess even back then you could call me CEO of the ROC. Ho, fresh out the front.